Why should we cherish objectivity as if ideas were innocent, as if they don't serve one interest or another? Surely we want to be objective if that means telling the truth as we see it, not concealing information that may be embarrassing to our point of view. But we don't want to be objective if it means pretending that ideas don't play a part in the social struggle of our time, and that we don't take sides in those struggles. Indeed, it is impossible to be neutral. In a world already moving in certain directions, where wealth and power are already distributed in certain ways, neutrality means accepting the way things are now. It is a world of clashing interests, war against peace, nationalism against internationalism, equality against greed, and democracy against elitism. And it seems to me both impossible and undesirable to be neutral in those conflicts. And that quote comes from Howard Zinn. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Well, indeed, folks, in a world such as we see before us today, Mr. Zinn was absolutely correct in his statement that it is truly impossible to be neutral in the face of such situations. Well, it is impossible for anybody who is able to think clearly anyway. It's impossible in the mind of anybody who is able to step back and take in the entire picture of our world holistically. Because the uncomfortable reality is that to remain neutral in the face of oppression is to side with the oppressor. Because if you see oppression around you in the world, or if you witness oppression in front of you, and you do remain neutral in the face of it, then all your neutrality will do is to ensure the continued oppression of the victim, and to virtually grant the perpetrator an open slather to do whatever they like. And it is precisely this attitude of neutrality that has created much of the situation we see around us in the world today. It's people's attitudes of saying, look, what can I do? I'm just a little person. I don't really want to get involved. I'm just neutral in the face of all this. Let them work it out between them. And indeed, folks, this type of attitude has been responsible for the decimation of entire countries and entire civilizations. You see, the uncomfortable truth is that people tend to point the finger at others when they see a problem. They like to believe that someone else is in charge and someone else is to blame for all of the things that we see around us, when very often these situations have in fact been created by the personal neutrality of the people within the society. And as uncomfortable and disturbing as it may be to admit it, folks, what we find if we really look is that all of the problems that we face are due to our own inaction and our own failure to face reality around us and to make a stand to improve reality, to leave the world a little bit better than how we found it. Too often we remain silent in the face of oppression. Too often we remain silent in the face of legislation which causes harm to others. Too often we remain silent in the face of the destruction of our environment that we see around us. Too often we fail to question the actions of our governments. People often adopt the attitude that, hey, I'm just a little person, what can I do, what can one man do? But really, folks, all the problems that we face have all been carried out ultimately by little people, just the same as you. They may be part of a big organization or a large body of people, but ultimately, when taken as individuals, they are just little people, with no more and no less power than anybody else. And one of our big problems is that we have relinquished the power that we have to these individuals because we've been trained to do so. We've been trained to believe that we must obey the dictates of others, even when those dictates do not have our best interests at heart, even when those dictates result in the destruction of our environment, the poverty that we see in the world, and the ultimate discarding of people within society in order to support an economic system. We see all of this and still we remain compliant because we believe that we are just little people and there's nothing that we can do. And when we do respond to the many problems that we see around us, we respond in a compartmentalized fashion. We may see something like poverty or something like the whaling or the coal seam gas mining, and we will only focus on that one little symptom, that one little issue. And this happens because we fail to step back to see the bigger problem and the bigger issue. We fail to take into account what caused the coal seam gas mining, what caused the whaling, what caused the poverty. And really, what caused it is the system itself. And don't get me wrong here, folks. I mean, in regard to issues such as coal seam gas mining or whaling, we absolutely do need people on the ground or in the ocean, as it were, to hold the front line for us, to prevent this from going any further forward than what it is, and to stop it right there at the fence and remain on the front line. But we also need the same group and the same organization to be addressing the actual root cause of the problem. Because the root cause of the problem is the system that allowed the problem to exist in the first place. Because it's always the system that actually created the problem. It's the inherent corruption within the system that creates the problem. And this system remains in place because of our compliance to the system, and very often due to our personal neutrality in the face of corruption, in the face of injustice. We just turn away and we say, what can I do? I prefer not to get involved. And so we see the world that we currently have. And so you see, folks, though the problem does lie with the system, ultimately, the problem lies with us. It lies with the perspective we have of reality and our failure to stand in our power and to stop being subservient to a system that is corrupt as the one that enslaves us, because it is corrupt, folks. And of course, very often, the corruption is there because of people who work within the system, because of the perspective that they have. Because very often what you find is that the perspective of the people who work within the system is one of subservience and compliance. These people simply say, well, what choice do I have? I have to do what I'm told because I'm working within these parameters. But it's kind of a pyramid thing anyway, folks. I mean, even if the person at the top does give you orders, it's up to you whether you comply with those orders. And even if the top person gives the second in charge some orders, and then the second in charge gives them to the manager, and then the manager gives them to the people below him, it all comes down to the compliance of the people, always. And it's the compliance of the people right down through the pyramid structure. But it has to stop at some stage, folks, and really all it would take for it to stop and for all this corruption to simply dissipate would be for people to stop complying with anything that contravenes natural law. And of course, there are some systems that work quite fine, folks. I mean, you've really got to put things in perspective. I mean, we need to have systems where people work within the parameters of the system in order for the system to work. I mean, if you've got a supermarket or you've got a mechanics business or whatever you've got, obviously you need people to perform specific actions. But when the actions that the individuals are performing are unjust, and they know that they are unjust, and they know that they are leading to greater harm down the track, then the individuals within these organizations do have a moral obligation to act, and they have a moral obligation to disobey the mandates that are given to them by the organizations within which they work. And of course, folks, I'm just using the analogy of the supermarket and the mechanics business to say, yes, we have to have structured businesses. But when I say people are doing damage, I'm saying that this is in the other organizations, in government organizations, in corporate organizations, in banking institutions, and even in scientific institutions and organizations and think tanks. And folks, it's very difficult to blame a lot of the people within some of these organizations because they are very compartmentalized. You'll get people in a university that are working on one particular experiment with a particular virus or whatever, perhaps trying to break down and code the DNA of a particular virus or something like that. And you'll have another organization that is working out how to multiply molecules or something. And neither of these organizations know about the other research that's going on. And you'll find that, okay, if you get that DNA code and you get this other work that's been done on manipulating these genes or multiplying these molecules and you mix it together, then it leads somewhere else that neither of these people know about. So it's all very compartmentalized. But what you find is that all of these think tanks and all of these university experiments and all these things are all funded by the same people at the top. They're the ones who get all the information. And then they put it all together in their own labs and they work out some very, very devious things with it. And that's the way it all goes. It's like when you build a weapon of war. I mean, you'll find that most states in America are involved in the manufacture of weapons. And it might be something as simple as a factory that makes washers, or a factory that makes nuts and bolts, or another factory that makes steel plates, or another factory that makes piping. I mean, none of these factories and none of these industries seem like they're involved in weapon manufacture, but what you'll find is that if you're building something like a tank, you're going to find a piece of that tank made in almost every state in America. And that keeps the people within the state in work. And they might be people who are completely against the war machine and don't want to know about weapons, don't want to know about going to Iraq, want peace. But again, they have to pay to be alive, and so they need a job. So they go to their factory and they make washers. They don't really have any idea that those washers are being used to hold bolts together on tanks that are going over to Iraq and killing people. But if you stop the manufacture of the tank, and you stop the manufacture of the weapons of war, you find huge factories in every single state in America suddenly are closed down, and you have all of these people who lose their jobs. You have mass protests, you have all sorts of depression and compression of society because all of these people are suddenly out of work, and that's no good because they have to pay to be alive, so they want the factory to reopen. As much as they don't want the war in Iraq to continue, they want the factory to be open so they can still make their washers because they need to pay to be alive. But they never think, well, hang on a minute, why do I have to pay to be alive? Why am I forced to work in an industry that is contributing to the death of millions and millions of people in order to support my life? Well, the only reason that I have to do this is because I don't have community around me, because I don't have time for community, I don't have time to get to know my neighbours, I don't have time to put in a garden and to have town meetings and expand my mind because I've got to be on the treadmill because I need to collect paper in order to pay to be alive. They never stop and just look at it and just think about it. I really believe, you know, if people could just stop work for 5 minutes and step back and just look, very often you'd find a light bulb going off in these people's minds and they'd realize how ridiculous the system is and how enslaved the general population is to this system. And this system is a very destructive system. And it's due to the destructive nature and the psychopathic nature of the system that we find all the problems that we see in the world. And yet we work to support this system when the actual fact is that the most expendable thing within its parameters is the human race. And most especially the workers within the system. Because these workers are discarded all the time. The more the system makes itself more efficient, the more people are discarded. It really is remarkable, isn't it, folks? I mean, when you step back and look at it, most people working within big organizations are always working to streamline the running of the organization and to make it more efficient. So basically what they're working towards is their own redundancy, and they are working towards a point where they become expendable and are discarded. In most cases, anyway, I mean, in the administration hierarchy, that's the way it works. Anyway, of course, you're always going to need workers to make the washers and operate the machinery and stuff like that, although things are getting very automated. But it is rather amazing that we work so hard to support a system which sees us as ultimately being the most expendable thing within its parameters. It's very clever the way it's been put together. But you imagine, folks, you imagine if everybody stayed home one day and spent the day putting a garden in their house or spent the day getting to know their neighbours. Everybody. What would the system do? What, would it arrest everybody and put everybody in jail because they didn't go to work? I mean, you couldn't. The system couldn't do this because the system needs the energy of the people that work within it. The hard part is getting people out of their left brain to the point where they can step back and see that the whole system is just an idea. It's just fiction. Just a set of rules that have been put there in order to control and regiment society. If people could just step back and see that for a day and actually stop participating in it for one day, we could literally change the world, folks. We could honestly do this. And this is the sort of stuff I'm talking about when I talk about non-compliance. And also, folks, non-compliance, really, as I've said on many shows before, is simply following natural law. Because all of the rules that have been legislated in place that control us and cause us to do harm against others by default because we support a section of the system that's out there doing harm, what you find when you look at it is that all of these rules and legislations actually contravene natural law. They superimpose themselves over natural law. I mean, we could be given a directive by a company to perform a specific action, and we can look at that and say, well, hang on, if I do this, a lot of people are going to suffer because of it. So now I have a moral obligation to not only disregard this directive, but also to report the person who gave me the directive, because they need to be removed from the position of power that they're in. I mean, obviously, if they are giving directives that are going to cause damage to people, damage to the environment, and these directives are not doing the right thing and following natural law and adhering to natural law, then obviously these people are not fit to hold that position. But we don't do that because we're scared to do that because we have to pay to be alive. And if we do that, we'll lose our jobs, and then how are we ever going to collect paper in order to put food on the table? It's a very, very insidious system that we live in, folks. And not only that, we find that the more corrupt and the more damaging to society these directives become, then the higher paid position we are able to achieve. It's like, okay, I gave him an order to do something which was absolutely going to devastate this community, but he did it anyway, and so now I'll give him more money. That's why CEOs are paid so much money, because very often, and especially in the case of mining companies and major corporations, they are forced to carry out directives that are utterly damaging to the environment, utterly damaging to people, but they do so because they've got this massive paycheck. And so that disconnects them from the people. Suddenly they're not like the little people because they've got more paper, so they can have more stuff and a bigger house. So they elevate themselves up the social ladder and they start looking down at the workers and seeing these people as lesser people. Very often this also leads to a certain disdain that the rich have for the poor, because they just think, well, you guys never made it the way I did because you couldn't work within the system the way I did because I'm smarter than you. And really what has happened is they've usually been forced to behave in a psychopathic or sociopathic nature, and the more they've behaved like it, the more sociopathic they've become. And they don't really notice their personality changing, and they don't really notice their own sociopathic nature, and they never step back to realize that they're working within the parameters of a system that is essentially psychopathic. As I've said before, folks, the whole system, the whole mentality surrounding this, it literally affects the mind like a pathogen. And it causes people to look at reality from a completely different perspective. And it's a very sociopathic and borderline psychopathic perspective. But again, it's very difficult to blame the individuals within it because this is the way humanity is trained. It's like a puppet on a string, folks. You know, it's all mind control. The whole system's mind control. I mean, the entire system that people live under is a form of mind control in itself, because the system is fiction. It's just an idea. And yet people behave within its parameters, and they're forced to walk between these lines and follow its rules all the time because they think it's real. I mean, to be quite honest, folks, once you step back and look at it, the fact that the system itself exists is truly one of the biggest examples of mind control that you can ever see, if you can simply step back from things and look at the system for what it is. It's almost like Legoland with battery-operated cars and little robots walking around, and you train them to do certain things and certain tasks and to walk on certain lines and drive in certain areas. And I'm pretty sure sometimes that the elite look at society as if they're playing with a huge train set. And that's all they see, folks, is the models and the trains and the buildings and the facades, and they have no problem blowing up a bridge here and there. They have no concern at all for the little playing pieces that exist within the train set, because they don't perceive them to be real people. They perceive them to be lesser beings, as I used a few weeks ago on one of the shows, I referred to the whole system as an ant farm. And perhaps that's even more apt than the train set, although we do have industry and we do have constructions and we do have infrastructure. So perhaps we could say it's a cross between a train set and an ant farm. But folks, this really is the way the elite look at society. And for them, it's all about further centralizing society. It's about further centralizing the system, more and more about the dehumanization of the species within the ant farm, and the greater separation between the elite and the working classes. And as I said in the recent film that I put out, Transformation, it's like a splitting of the species where you have the attractive, intelligent elites and you have the dulled down, dim-witted, goblin-like workers. But yes, folks, it is ultimately all mind control that holds this society together. It really is. And of course, we've seen this mind control rapidly escalating and becoming more and more prevalent over the last few decades. But it all seems to be coming to a head here in 2012, and this has been occurring in a number of ways, not the least of which is the rapid awakening that is happening amongst the people. I don't know about what you're seeing in your town, folks, but here in Byron Bay, I'm really seeing a lot of people begin to question why reality functions the way it does. Of course, there's a lot of people here that don't. We've got a large amount of transients through this town because it's a tourist town. And so, of course, it's difficult to know what the tourists are thinking, but amongst the locals, I am most certainly seeing a lot of people questioning their surroundings now. And I must say that the new film I've been handing out to people in town has been quite well received. I've got a lot of positive feedback from that. I've actually got a lot of positive feedback from the online community regarding the new film as well. The new film is called Transformation. That's something that I've been working on for the last 18 months or so. Of course, I haven't been working on it solidly, folks. I've been doing all sorts of other things, but I've been working on it when I get time. And I actually released that last week on the 15th of this month. And that has been very well received. So if you haven't seen it, folks, check it out. It's available on thecrowhouse.com. And I'm still working to get the full high-res version uploaded to the website. I'm having a little bit of difficulty reducing the file to a manageable size so that I can upload it. The file that I've got here at the moment is 5.3 gig, the entire movie file, so that's a little bit large to put on the website, but I am trying to find a way of reducing it down. So I'll keep you posted on that one, but hopefully it will be up there soon. And I would like to say thank you to all the people who have sent me such positive responses and positive comments to the film. There is a little bit of information in there that is rather unsettling, but it's information that people need to have. But I believe we do have ways to fix these problems, and that's what I'm working on at the moment, and we'll see what we can do by the end of the year. I hope to have part two released by the end of the year. The film will be in at least two parts, which is probably kind of confusing because there's four parts to part one, but that's just the way it goes, folks. And as I said, hopefully Transformation 2 will be released by the end of the year. Well, that's the plan anyway at this stage. I do have another film I need to get to work on pretty quickly, which will be a short film concerning the Chappelle Corby case, and I really would like to get that out as quickly as possible, so that's going to be what I'm dedicating the next couple of months to. I really do believe that we have a wonderful opportunity this year to make a real difference in this world. I truly believe this to be the case. I believe that people are beginning to see the way things work. People are beginning to overcome their class division. And class division is such a silly thing, folks, because really there's only the people and the elites. That's it. The concept of the middle class that is presented to the people by the media and by the elites is quite interesting, because the reality is that there is no middle class. But of course, when you address the middle class, like Obama will address the middle class, Julia Gillard here in Australia will address the middle class, they do this because everybody thinks they're part of the middle class, when really there's only two classes, and that's the elite and the workers. There are those within the working class who have been discarded and those who are still holding positions as CEOs, but they still have to work. Not very much, but they do still have to work. They have to earn a living, they have to collect paper, they have to pay to be alive. So there's really only two classes, folks, the elite and the workers. And what we're seeing is actions being undertaken by the elite to expand the divide between these two classes. This is why we're seeing the price of everything go up, like electricity here in Australia is going through the roof. It's getting to a stage where people cannot even have just a family in a house. You can't have a working class couple get married and even go and get a house to rent these days because they can't afford the price of the rent, so they have to get boarders in there or go and move in with another couple or share with someone in some way because there's just no way that people can afford the rent and the electricity for basic accommodation. I mean, this has all been escalated to a point where it's not affordable anymore to live in a house. And so what we're seeing here is more and more people being discarded by the system because they don't need this many people in the world now, folks. They only need enough people to run the machine. And the depopulation agenda is actually well underway. It's just that most people don't realize it's happening. But it is, folks. It's happening in very many ways within our society, and there are numerous methods that have been employed to ensure that the population is culled very, very quickly. And I don't really want to rain on anyone's parade by saying that, but it really is true, folks. You've got to be very careful of what you do in the world today because there are all sorts of things that have been put in place which are designed to lower people's life expectancy and to prevent them from having children. And it's all very controlled and all very contrived, but that is the way it's going, folks. And I really do believe that people need to pay attention to what is happening. But I think it's break time here, so I'll leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. It's a pleasure to have your company here on the show today, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. Welcome back, folks. Now, before the break, I was talking about the fact that there really is only two classes of society and how mankind is basically being discarded. There is truly a massive depopulation agenda underway, and it's sort of coming at the people from all directions, and many people are failing to see it there. And that's okay. I mean, you've got your life and your life will run its course, as will my life run its course. I mean, I won't be here for too much longer. I'm easy over halfway through my life now. But what I'm thinking of is the life that my son will have and the life that his children will have and so on for further generations if these generations are able to exist. Because, as I said, there are a great many methods being employed to cull this population. But there are also a great many things we can do to prevent this from happening. And I really do think that one of the most important things we can do, folks, is to eat organic food. You've got to make sure you are eating food that is pure and healthy. Eating in itself, folks, is something that causes more disease, death, and discomfort than any other thing. Eating is the main cause of all of the problems that we have, all our health problems, all the ailments that we get. Most of it is related to eating because we simply don't eat the right food. You know, we eat lots and lots of processed food, which is simply not good for us. And so we develop all of these problems in later life. And we develop all of these genetic problems and these genetic complications which we hand down to our children. As I mentioned in the film Transformation, where I was showing some newspaper clippings, and as you can find out for yourself, GM foods cause sterility through successive generations of species. Every test they've done on mice or rats, you see that the third generation of mice or rats is unable to breed. And they get smaller and frailer as well. You'll find that each successive generation is a little bit smaller and frailer than the previous generation until they get to a point where they are unable to breed. And this is from genetically modified food. So you must not eat genetically modified food. I absolutely advise every single person who listens to this show to go and plant a garden. I've been talking to you about this for 4 years now, And I think it's imperative that you do, because genetically modified food is affecting your genes and it is being passed down through successive generations. Well, this is what all the scientific tests say anyway. And if you're going to eat meat, I mean, I don't recommend that you do, but if you are going to eat meat, then at least try to eat grass-fed meat and try to maybe catch your own. If you're living in America, maybe catch some deer, or if you're living in Australia, maybe eat some roo or something like that. But don't eat grain-fed cattle and factory-farmed chicken and all of this sort of stuff, folks, because it is affecting you in very, very adverse ways, very slowly, very subtly, but it is doing so. So I cannot stress the importance of eating the right food. And it's amazing, really. I mean, guys will go to an incredible amount of effort to make sure they put the right oil in their car and all of this sort of stuff. They look after their machinery and make sure it's very, very well looked after. But when it comes to the machinery of their body, they just put anything in there. It's quite remarkable. But you need to look at your body as if it is a vehicle, because really that's what it is. It's the vehicle that your consciousness uses to experience reality. And we just jump in this thing and we just drive it into the ground. And then we wonder why it doesn't function very well. But think about it, folks. Every cell in your body renews itself every 7 years. So why do you age? Why do you get sick? Why do all of these things happen? Well, it's because of what we put into the machine. So you need to be eating clean, healthy, organic food. And the best way to get organic food, folks, is to grow it yourself. There are many, many towns, many communities that have communal gardens. And if you don't have one, then perhaps start having community meetings and find out who's got some land, who's got a block of land where we can put a communal garden, and then all go and participate in it. Because whoever owns the land gets value from it, because they get to eat the food too. And so you all know that the vegetables you are getting are all fresh and organic. And perhaps you could even organize a hunting expedition once every couple of weeks if you are a meat eater. Go and catch some deer, or go and catch some wild game that you know is going to be good. But don't eat prepackaged food. Don't eat prepackaged meat. None of that sort of stuff is any good for you, folks. Most meat is grain-fed, which is very bad for you. It's also full of hormones and growth hormones. I mean, you've really got to watch what you're eating, folks. It's one of the most important things you can do. And I believe that eating the right food also frees your mind, because you take on the genetic qualities of the food you eat. Of course you do. Anybody who argues that you don't, I mean, they're just not seeing reality for what it is. Of course you take on the genes of whatever you're eating. There's been suggestion that this is why sheep and cattle have been promoted as the main source of food for humans, because sheep will basically do what they're told and they're very controllable, and cattle are very docile. And so now you have a race of people who eat mainly sheep and cattle, and so you've got a very docile and very controllable race of people because they take on the genetic qualities of the food that they eat. This would be why in some cultures, some African cultures and some tribal cultures, if a hunter would go and kill a lion, he would eat the heart of the lion because he wanted that strength. He wanted those genetic codes in his body. And when you think about this and you think about how you do take on the genetic qualities of your food, well, it makes perfect sense that you would eat the heart of the lion. And the fact that the natives would do this indicates that the natives knew about this sort of stuff and indicates that there may actually be something to it, because otherwise why would they do that? And therefore it makes perfect sense that the elite would be feeding the people sheep and cattle, so that they can treat the people like sheep and cattle because they behave like sheep and cattle. I mean, really, it makes perfect sense, folks, when you look at genetics. And this would also explain the incredible drop we're seeing in the male sperm count and how men are becoming more and more feminine, quite possibly because of the amount of chicken that people consume. Because, I mean, folks, you don't eat roosters, you eat chicken. You're all female. All the chicken that you eat is female. And, of course, it contains vast amounts of estrogen and vast amounts of female hormones and all sorts of stuff. So this is also getting into people's genetic codes. Now, folks, I'm not saying that if you eat chicken, you become feminine. What I'm saying is it's a genetic thing. You find that through successive generations. The genders are merging closer and closer together. I mean, there really is a lot more going on here than meets the eye in most cases, folks. The human race is quite literally being bombarded from all directions, not the least of which is biologically and genetically. And folks, this biological and genetic attack has certainly been taken to the next level now with the aerosol spraying that is being carried out around the world by our governments, what some people refer to as chemtrails, what the government refers to as geoengineering or climate remediation. And look, they admit that they do this, folks. If you're out there and you're someone who doesn't believe chemtrails are real, well, they are, folks. I mean, chemtrails, the word has probably been a little bit vilified, but aerosol spraying carried out at high altitude by jets is absolutely real. It is admitted to by governments. The UK House of Commons has released a report on geoengineering that specifically refers to high altitude aerosol spraying. There are also reports on climate remediation that have been released by government bodies. Bill Gates has even been on and given a talk. I believe it may have even been at TED Talks. It was somewhere where he mentioned that they were conducting geoengineering and said, oh yes, we have to do this in order to protect us from global warming and climate change. So there's always an excuse, folks, but I assure you it isn't being done to protect us from global warming. It's being done to deliver genetic codes, metallic salts, and nanoparticulates to a very wide area across the planet. That's what the aerosol spraying is all about. And there's a myriad of evidence to support this claim. I actually talked a lot about this in the new film, Transformation. If you haven't seen the film, it is available on YouTube now, but I would warn you that though I did attempt to break the news to the people as gently as possible, the film is a little disturbing in some parts, and if you do choose to watch it in its entirety, you are stepping into some pretty deep water once the implications of what I'm suggesting in the film actually sink in a little bit. And folks, with the film, I'm not attempting any fear-mongering, quite the opposite. I'm simply presenting you with what my research has presented me with, and I'm just going where the evidence leads me. And I believe that all the claims that I've made in the film are right there for all to see if you just connect the dots in the right way. So yes, folks, it is stepping into a little bit of deep water, but all is not lost because we still have plenty of opportunity and plenty of ways to fix this problem and to fix the issues that I've addressed in the film. But we need community to do it. We need that communal spirit. We need people to respect each other and to see that there is a bigger agenda here. And we can fix it. We do have the ability to fix it because we are the people. And the most important thing for everybody out there to understand is that the perpetrators of all of these atrocities that have been carried out against humankind are just people too. That's all they are, folks. They are just a group of people, a group of psychopaths who have maneuvered themselves into a position where they now control society. And they are in the process of culling the population, genetically altering that which is left, and taking control of all of the planet's resources. And we certainly do have a big fight on our hands here, folks. It isn't going to be an easy battle, but it's a battle that must be waged. But it can be a peaceful battle because it's really a battle of will. It's a battle of power. It's a battle of consciousness. It's a matter of you knowing who and what you are and knowing that you are no better or no worse than anybody else on this planet. We are each valid and we each have the ability to stand up against this system. And by standing up against it and by preventing the destruction of our water table and all the things that they are doing, we are doing the right thing. We are upholding natural law. Because it is our governments that are all operating in breach of trust, that are all operating in breach of natural law. So we don't have to do what these people tell us, because all they're inflicting on us is legislation, which is simply stuff that they wrote down that contravenes natural law. So when we are faced with a situation where the destruction of the water table is taking place, or the pollution of the oceans, or the attacking of whales, or the destruction of the forest, or people being made homeless and discarded, when we are faced with all of these issues, we need to rectify them and know that in doing so, we are upholding law, we are upholding natural law, and that the perpetrators of all of these atrocities are the ones who are breaking actual law. And we need mass but peaceful civil disobedience in the face of all of these issues. I mean, we simply don't have to go along with it. And we need to understand this because we do have the power to stop it. And if you do stand against the system and the system keeps pushing forward, then you need to knock it back. Knock it back, because whoever is pushing forward, the system itself, the government that is pushing forward with something like a coal seam gas well, you have the right to prevent that well from being put up, folks, because that well is contributing to the destruction of the planet and the destruction of the human race. And so preventing that well from being constructed is actually upholding natural law. And we need to get this perspective. If they're going to push through, folks, and they're going to force you to do something which is in breach of natural law, then you have the right to absolutely defend yourself and to stop the progress of their destruction by any means at your disposal. Because that's called doing the right thing. And I'm not saying that you hurt people, folks. I'm not saying that you get violent and hurt people or anything like that, but you simply don't allow it to go ahead. It's very, very simple. There's all sorts of ways of preventing wells from being put in, and I'm sure that if you're creative, you'll find some way that will slow the process up considerably. As long as it doesn't involve hurting anybody. Because if you hurt somebody, well, that defeats the whole purpose of trying to do the right thing, because hurting someone simply isn't the right thing. Now, these people that are putting up these wells, folks, they've got a television education. They're brainwashed by the amount of paper that they're collecting, and they have this left brain education. They don't realize the damage that they're doing. So try not to hate them. Just realize that they're just closed off, and find another way to operate without hurting them. But make no mistake, folks, we do have a fight on our hands here, especially with things like coal seam gas. Because coal seam gas mining isn't about harvesting gas. It's about the destruction of the water table. That's precisely what it's about. We don't need gas for our energy needs, folks. We really don't. You know, even just in the United States, when they sink an oil well, they burn off, they flash off more gas from American oil wells in 1 month than America uses in 1 year. So they could simply harvest the gas that they use in the flash-offs from the oil wells if it was really about collecting gas. So it's not about collecting gas, folks. And we don't even need these type of energy devices. We do not need gas for energy. As I demonstrated at the end of the new film, Transformation, there's an energy device developed by a man called Justin Hall Tipping that he demonstrated at TED Talks that clearly shows that we can generate electricity just from light. And I'm not talking about solar panels. It's a completely new procedure of harvesting electrons that's been developed through a carbon-based film you can put on your window. And in fact, you can put it on anything. You could cover your car in this stuff. You could cover an aeroplane in it, or a train, or anything, a boat. It doesn't matter. And you can extract energy simply from light. And even if the process isn't quite perfected yet, I'm not sure whether it is or isn't, but even if it isn't, just the fact that this process exists at all, I mean, you'd think that every government in the world would be dropping everything to implement this type of energy system around the globe. And the fact that they're not speaks volumes. So you've really got to let that sink into your head, folks, that they do not need the gas in order to create energy. We don't need coal to create energy. We don't need solar panels. We don't need nuclear power. We don't need any of these things to create energy. And when you look at coal seam gas, they say they are doing it to harvest gas that we do not need. So why are they really doing it? Okay, well, what is the one inevitable outcome of coal seam gas mining? It's the pollution of groundwater. So that is why coal seam gas mining is being conducted. There's a war going on, folks. It's a war being waged against the people of the world, and it's being waged by the elite. It's happening right now, and people simply aren't paying attention. This is something that I said in a film that I released in 2008 called The Big Picture, where I used almost those exact words. And it's important that people pay attention and that they realize the power they have to stop this machine from progressing any further. That power lies in non-compliance. Non-compliance is the upholding of natural law, and the only way we can really pull it off is through the power of community. So we need to put that common unity back into community. We need to stand in non-compliance and natural law and do the right thing to prevent the rest of this infrastructure from being put in place. And they say they're doing it to save the planet. You know, they justify their actions. Oh, we need to cull the human race in order to save the planet because the human race is out of control. But the human race is only out of control because it's operating within very restricted parameters and it's using very, very pollutive industries to fulfill its energy needs. But none of this is necessary. All of this has been put in place by the people who now wish to cull the human race because it's kind of gone too far. And then they'll have all the free energy devices and they'll have all the stuff that they want and all this incredible lifestyle in their mega cities, which they will control. And they will just puppeteer the people within these mega cities. And then they'll have the outlying regions where you have the dumbed down worker species that harvests the coal and harvests the timber and whatever else they need for their mega cities. That's exactly where they're going. That's what Agenda 21 is. You know, you've got these mega cities, these mega concentrated areas of population, and then you've got nature comes back everywhere else except for the outlying regions that are used to extract resources. That's Agenda 21. That's where the human race is heading, and it's being done right under people's noses because they're simply not paying attention. They're distracted by all the pop stars and the fashions and everything that's on the television that's used to distract them, which is exactly the purpose of television. Television is such a fantasy world, folks. It's such a fantasy world. Nothing that you see in there is real. And really, when you look around you at your everyday world, what you see is a society that is completely disconnected from reality, completely disconnected from nature, and completely disconnected from themselves because of the perspective of reality they're fed by the television. It's mass brainwashing, folks. It's mass hypnosis, and it's very, very difficult to break people out of it. But I think more and more people are waking up simply because many of them are running so fast on the treadmill now that they are beginning to realize that something just isn't quite right here. And you've got to expect this, folks. And this is what I've often said about how problems hold within their silver lining opportunities, because all of these problems are opportunities for change, folks. And the worse it gets, then the more opportunity we have for other people to wake up. This is what coal seam gas has very much done. I knew it would. I said a year ago that coal seam gas would be a catalyst that would bind humankind together because it is an issue that can unite everybody because everybody needs water. And that's exactly what coal seam gas mining has been doing. We've seen a massive amount of cross-sections of people from different communities all standing up to address this issue, and a lot has been done to prevent it. Still not enough. We still need to do more, and we really need to follow the chain through the line of command up to government and find out which politicians allowed something like coal seam gas mining to take place, and we need to hold these people responsible for their actions. And I think coal seam gas mining is a great tool that could be used to expose the corruption in the system for what it is. It's like the Chappelle Corby case here in Australia that I'm going to be addressing in the next short film that I do. This is a wonderful case in as much as it can be used to not only free Chappelle Corby, but also expose the corruption that is inherent within the entire Australian government and the media and the whole system, folks. It sort of lays it all bare. And when we find cases such as this, I think we need to tell people about them. We need to speak about them as loudly and as often as we can, because all of this contributes to public awareness, and we need this public awareness so that we can move forward in a positive and empowering fashion from this point. Something that's been very gratifying, actually, lately is the amount of emails and messages I've received from people who are starting movements and having meetings in their area. They're starting community gardens, and they're really discovering who they are, and they're really discovering the wealth of people around them, not their physical wealth, but the wealth of the actual person, because everybody has something to offer, folks, and everybody is valid, and we are all in this together. As I said in the first segment of the show, there really are only two classes, folks. There are the elite and the people they control. And it doesn't matter what your perceived class is within the controlled people. It doesn't matter whether you're a CEO or whether you're a peasant. You're still ultimately heading for the same place. And no matter where you are in the social scale, the elite will always perceive you as being expendable. And even if you have a good position within a corporate structure, then the more streamlined that corporate structure becomes, then the more expendable you become, and eventually you will be discarded, simply because that's the way the system is designed. You know, when you step back and you really look at it, folks, it truly is a remarkable system, and it's remarkably efficient, and it's diabolically clever, and you've really got to admire the mind that created it just for its intellect. Well, I suppose admire isn't really the right word, but you've got to appreciate the intellect that went into the construction of this system, and you've got to really marvel at the sheer efficiency of the system, how it's managed to spread its tentacles out across the entire globe to encompass virtually everything, and then it basically puts its little toehold in the ground and pulls itself back and contracts and discards all the people that created the system along the way, until you're left with this very, very tight controlled system, and the world is finally yours. Very fascinating, folks, very diabolical and extremely clever. You truly do have to marvel at the intellect that created it and the efficiency with which it operates. But of course now it is being laid bare for all to see, and so now, more than any other time in history, we actually have an opportunity to deal with it. We have an opportunity to bring about some very real and very positive change. We have an opportunity to free humankind from the shackles that have bound them for so long. And this opportunity is brought to us simply by the system exposing its workings so clearly and so openly for all to see. It's brought to us through the opportunities of things such as coal seam gas mining, through things such as the genetic modification of the food, because all you've got to do is research this stuff. Go and look at any university reports on it, and you'll find how damaging it is. Hungary just threw out all of their Monsanto corn. They threw all the GM corn out of the country because they can see that it is a danger to life itself. And so all of these things are opportunities, folks, and they're all being presented to us on a silver platter. It's just up to us to act. And that is it for me today, folks. We are completely out of time again. Thank you all for joining me today. It's been a pleasure talking to you again. Please do try to make time to watch the new film Transformation that I've released on thecrowhouse.com, and it's also available on YouTube. It's in 7 parts because I'm unable to upload the full-length film, but it's in high definition, and I'll make it available on the website for you as soon as I found a way of reducing the file to a manageable size for uploading. It's fascinating, but it really has been presenting me with no end of trouble every time I've attempted to reduce or shrink the file in some way. But that is it for me, folks. I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take care until then, and never doubt the power that you have to bring about positive change. Indeed, any positive change that's ever been brought about in the world has been brought about through the actions of people just like you. In La Keshe.